It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
Back with us now is Morgan Ortegas, former spokesperson for the U.S. Department of State under Secretary Pompeo and President Trump. She is founder of Polaris National Security. Morgan, good to have you back.
Thank you, Guy. Great to be back.
I saw that you recently said that China, and specifically the Chinese Communist Party, is trying to decouple from the United States. What do you mean by that?
Oh, interesting. So, I mean, this is mostly like conversations that you hear happening in business circles, right? You'll hear the Treasury Secretary or the Commerce Secretary or others discussing from the perspective of American corporations who are doing business in China, you know, selling widgets there. Maybe it's Apple or car companies. And, you know, they always say, oh, but should we decouple for China? Should we de-risk? What should it be? And I always say that I think the question is framed in entirely the wrong manner, because China has already made the decision to decouple from us. They are, first of all, you know, you've had American businesses there since the early 2000s. You know, you've had, since the Clinton administration, multiple Republican and Democratic administrations that encouraged the opening up in China, that encouraged the WTO, World Trade Organization, accession, from China, that was welcomed by the Bush administration. So American businesses at the end of the Clinton administration and the beginning of the Bush administration going through to Obama encouraged American corporations to do business in China. Now what you're seeing after, you know, 20 or 30 years of pushing that is, this should be no surprise, is that the Chinese Communist Party were just stealing our intellectual property, stealing our ideas, stealing, you know, the technical means to deliver whatever the widget may be to the Chinese consumer. And now they have Chinese versions of, you know, whether it's an iPhone, even though Apple is there, or whether it's an electric vehicle. I mean, they've spent so much money, the Chinese have, investing in their own domestic EV manufacturing. And so you see, basically, you see the sales of anything that is American that has been doing business in China, it goes down every single year. And it goes down not because of a decision made by the United States, but because the Chinese Communist Party has decided to not be dependent on the United States. So, you know, we should kind of, in my mind, we should wake up and smell the roses.
To Russia and the terrorist attack in Moscow at that concert, obviously very disturbing images, a lot of people dead, ISIS claiming responsibility, and then the conspiracies took over. You had a lot of people trying to sort of steal the credit away from ISIS, which seemed to annoy them to some extent. They were like, no, we really did this horrible terrorist action. But I know that the Kremlin is trying to, at least to some extent, blame this on Ukraine. Some people have wondered, is this some kind of a false flag operation by the Russian government, or are they just jumping on the opportunity to blame Ukraine as they would really anything? Then there are questions about, okay, why did this happen? How did this happen? I just wonder what you make of it from the U.S. perspective. If you were still at the State Department, obviously you'd have a lot more intelligence, but is this just what it looks like? ISIS attacking innocent people in Moscow, or is there more than meets the eye?
What we know so far publicly is, yes, this is an ISIS, specifically an ISIS Khorasan attack. ISIS Khorasan is based in Afghanistan. Now, we all knew initially, no matter what happened, that it would be convenient for Russia to blame Ukraine, because obviously they have an ongoing war that they initiated there. And so anytime they get to blame Ukraine, it's good. Although I would say, to me, that's sort of a backward way of doing it. I mean, you were claiming that the Ukrainians are, you know, far more sophisticated than you want the Russian people to believe, if they can actually pose as ISIS-K fighters and kill, you know, over 100 Russians. So the logic of blaming it on the Ukrainians, even though convenient, doesn't necessarily jive with the rest of Russian messaging on Ukraine and how they're, you know, are supposedly winning there. But listen, when you go back to ISIS-K, this is one of those things, you know, one of the things that I don't like being right about, and I've talked about this on your show before, and I've been sort of screaming about this for the past year and a half, not really feeling like people were really paying attention. But, you know, what has happened in Afghanistan, and again, this is not recent. I've been saying this for at least a year and a half, at least on the air, that ISIS Khorasan has a foothold in every province in Afghanistan. So basically, what you're seeing, an analogy here, what you're seeing in Afghanistan is what happened to President Obama in Iraq and Syria. So going back, and I was actually in the intelligence community during President Obama's first term, we all remember that he famously withdrew all of the troops from Iraq, right? And what happened whenever he pulled everybody out of Iraq, left no trainers, left no residual force? What happened is that you had something called Al-Qaeda in Iraq, AQI, that later turned into ISIS. And ISIS, actually, by the time President Trump got into office, ISIS had a physical caliphate in Iraq and Syria. They controlled swaths of territory. They controlled land. It was a very serious and dangerous problem. And so what did President Trump and his team have to do in 2017 and 2018? We had to unleash the military to destroy that physical caliphate of ISIS in Iraq and Syria, to kill Baghdadi. I mean, this was a massive CT effort. And the whole reason that President Trump had to do that in his first term is because President Obama withdrew all of the troops from Iraq. He had no plan. And his NSC, which, by the way, a lot of those officials are now Biden administration officials, his NSC sat there and watched ISIS grow and fester for 2 years. When they finally started cutting off, you know, journalist heads and had the capability to potentially hit the homeland. And then it was an election year in 2016 when President Obama finally woke up and realized, you know what, people are afraid of ISIS. Like, it's no longer the JV squad. I better go after them. And he started to, but President Trump really had to do that. So what has happened? President Biden has repeated the same mistake in Afghanistan, withdrawing all of the troops. Now, his withdrawal was obviously much, much more chaotic, much worse than when President Obama withdrew from Iraq. So we all know it's been well documented how badly Biden's withdrawal screwed up. And we had those 13 brave American men and women that we lost that day, and they didn't need to die. And I would just say as a quick aside, thank God at least General McKenzie, former CENTCOM commander in that House testimony last week, took responsibility. That's something that no one has ever done in President Biden's national security team. And I find it utterly disgusting that none of them can take responsibility for what happened that day. So fast forward, they went against the advice of all the military commanders, which is to leave 2,500 American troops, to leave a residual force. They pull everybody out, and big shock, what happens? ISIS Khorasan, which is the affiliate in Afghanistan, starts to grow, starts to fester, and they have the time, they have the space, they have the money, they start to develop the capabilities. And now they have, what we know so far is that they are behind this attack in Russia. Now, the second question that everybody asks is, why Russia? Well, people forget that Russia, Putin is aligned with Assad, who is the leader of Syria, and Assad is aligned with Iran. So Russia is very much in cahoots with Assad and with Iran. Russia actually killed a lot of ISIS guys in Syria and in Iraq, but mostly in Syria. And so, of course, Assad, the Iranians are Persian. ISIS hates the Persians, hates the Shia. They're Sunni. We've been all talking about this for over 20 years since 9/11, so I think the audience understands those divides pretty well. But yeah, I mean, it's not surprising that they would go after Russia because Russia is a supporter of Iran, and they killed a lot of ISIS guys in Syria.
They hate us more. I think that's probably a fair bet. If they're able to reconstitute and attack Russia in this very significant and spectacular way, obviously, they're much closer proximity-wise to Russia than they are to the United States. But could we be next? I mean, you think about the southern border. You think about the threats that are in place here. We see Israel getting hit. We see Russia getting hit. The big prize would be us.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we already know the answer to that question because we've had Biden's military top generals that have testified about this very issue before Congress. You know, in fact, the current CENTCOM commander, Kirilla, has warned of the ISIS-K growing threat. And he said he has stated on more than one occasion that ISIS-K could reach the homeland, could attack the homeland within a matter of 6 months with little or no warning. And so here's the problem. I'm not a member of Congress. If I was, I would get every general, every Biden intelligence official before them and say, what intelligence do we have on ISIS-K in Afghanistan? Do we have the capability? Do we have the intelligence collection capability to hit them? My sinking suspicion, I don't know if we do or don't. I'm not in front of the intelligence on this. My worry is that because we have no presence in Afghanistan, that we don't have the people on the ground, we don't have a counterterrorism presence to be able to track these guys. Maybe we have more capabilities, and if so, if we're lucky enough to actually have the capabilities to know where these guys are, then why aren't we hitting them? Biden should be hitting. He promised us, the Secretary of Defense promised us that we would have these quote-unquote over-the-horizon attack capabilities, which me and others were skeptical at the time. But do we still have these over-the-horizon attack capabilities that they promised when they withdraw from Afghanistan? And do we know where these ISIS-K fighters are in Afghanistan? If the answer is yes, that we know they are, then why aren't we hitting them? We should be hitting them now. They're already a threat to Russia. It's only a matter of time before they're a threat to our homeland. And then, of course, if the answer is no, we don't have the intelligence collection capabilities to know where we are. Well, that's what we all warned you about. And this is why we all told you not to withdraw and not to go down to zero.
Yep. And
sorry to get worked up about this guy.
No, it makes sense. And earlier,
I like working on this.
No, in a previous answer, you talked about the JV squad, which reminded me that's exactly what President Obama called ISIS, which was a very dumb thing to say. And eventually that blew up in his face. And hopefully this doesn't blow up further in the Biden administration's face, meaning for the rest of us. But that is, I think, a well-founded fear, something we need to be thinking about and watching very closely. Morgan Ortegas, let's shift to Israel. A lot of developments on that front. We'll get to the topic when we return from this quick break on The Guy Benson Show.
Not the same talking points here. The Guy Benson Show.
Morgan Ortegas, former State Department spokeswoman, is our guest here on The Guy Benson Show. Morgan, I want to ask you about Israel and this whole diplomatic row with Netanyahu and Biden and the unity government in Israel and the United Nations vote, where the U.S. fully understood that Israel was against this flawed ceasefire resolution in the Security Council. The administration was pressuring Israel to take a separate deal on the hostages with Hamas. Hamas eventually rejected it anyway. But the U.S. government, the Biden administration, had any number of reasons to use and wield the veto power at the Security Council to have Israel's back this week. And instead, the U.S. abstained and allowed the vote to go through, which then triggered the Israelis to say, okay, this extra delegation that Biden requested, by the way, to come to Washington and basically try to bully the Israelis not to go into Rafah and finish off the Hamas threat there, they said, okay, we're going to pull back that delegation because you just stabbed us in the back at the United Nations. This seems like a real mess. It seems like actually a pretty frightening moment where U.S. support for Israel at very high levels is wavering while they're in the middle of this war against medieval genocidal savages, existential in a lot of ways. What's your read on what happened at Turtle Bay this week, how Biden played it, and the response from Israel?
You know, it's just, the whole thing is just so disheartening. It's also so entirely predictable. If you want to get to a ceasefire, if you are serious about wanting to get the American hostages home, which I don't think that they are serious about, to get there, you have to pressure Hamas, not Israel. And that's what this administration ultimately has completely asked backwards. You know, Hamas needs to feel like they are going to be destroyed down to the very last fighter. That is the only way they're going to make a deal. We have shown time and time again that putting pressure on our friends and allies is not the way to do it.
Yeah, how about pressure on Qatar? Because they have a lot of clout and a lot of sway with Hamas. It seems like a lot of the public pressure and the tough language and even a vote like we saw at the UN, these are all shots at Israel. And it's like, what are we doing?
Yeah, and by the way, it's not surprising. It was December, I believe it was December 2020, maybe January 2020, not 2020, pardon me. It was December 2016, maybe January, but it was right before Trump was inaugurated. President Biden and his team, President Obama, then President Biden, it's the same group of people, so, you know, whatever. But President Obama and his team also abstained in a very important resolution regarding Israel at the UN. Me and others were inflamed and disgusted at the time that they took that position at the UN. And so it's when I saw the abstain vote, it just made me, you know, remember 8 years ago whenever the exact same thing, you know, happened. So it's the same people. You know, when people ask me, why is Biden's team doing X, Y, Z? It's like, it's not Biden's team. It's President Obama's foreign policy team in their third term.
Yep. And the difference being, whatever the context was for that abstention years ago, it didn't come months after the worst slaughter of Jews since the Holocaust, which is what we saw on October 7th.
Absolutely.
It makes it even worse to be doing something like that right now. and it's something that we spend a lot of time talking about here on this show. But since you mentioned President Trump, I think it's absolutely true that his policy with Israel was so much better than Obama's or Biden's. I think that's absolutely the case. However, I was distressed to hear this answer. He was interviewed about Israel, and he was asked about the rise in anti-Semitism since October 7th. You and I have talked about this, Morgan, on our show, and Trump immediately pivoted in his answer to that question to actually criticizing Israel, which sort of took my breath away. Listen to Cut 10.
Since October 7, we saw a major rise of anti-Semitic attacks in America. What are you going to do about it?
Well, that's because you fought back. And when you fought back, and I think Israel made a very big mistake, and I see it, and I saw it every night, and I wanted to call them and say, don't do it. It would say the Israeli Defense Ministry or a tag would be on these photos and shots, I mean, moving shots of bombs being dropped into buildings in Gaza. And I said, ooh, that's a terrible portrait. It's a it's a very bad picture for the world. The world is seeing this.
And the interviewer said, but terrorists were in those buildings. And Trump said, well, you've got to go and do what you have to do, speaking of Israel, but basically saying it looks bad to the world. I don't know what to do with that, Morgan. What is Israel supposed to do?
Well, I read so I thought that Barak Ravid's tweets on this were pretty misleading. So I went back and read all of the context of everything that Trump said in the full quote. And for me, you know, I think at first blush, when you read it, you think, wait a minute, what's he saying there? When I went back and read it in his entirety, I read him saying, and I don't quote me on this, but I think he said something along like, you have to finish the job, you have to do it till the end, obviously referring to, Hamas. So I think that there was a little bit more nuance in what
he was talking about PR
there.
He was talking about PR and what you publicize. I just don't know what Israel's supposed to do in terms of PR beyond what they're already doing with the deck stacked against them internationally at the UN and elsewhere by so much anti-Semitism and anti-Israel sentiment. They're going to be lied about relentlessly no matter what they do. And for them not to engage in that PR fight, I just don't see that as a viable option. I think that's an unfair criticism of Israel by Trump, whose policy on Israel is night and day better than the current administration and the Obama administration as well. I just wanted to get your reaction. I'm glad that we had time to get to it. Morgan Ortegas, former State Department spokesperson, founder of Polaris National Security, on The Guy Benson Show. Morgan, thank you.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
We'll be right back after this break.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.